How's everybody doing?
It's not starting out right here, but who knows? Hey, you know, we got some crazy glue. We got some duct tape. We'll make everything fit together. But let me see if I can get our tech there. It came back up. All right. So we may be in business. There we go. We're in business now. I apologize for that. How's everybody doing? It's 308, 81 degrees on this Wednesday, June 18th, 2025. It's hump day. Halfway through the week. I just did see that manslaughter case up in Boston where I don't even know her name, Karen Reed or whatever her name is, supposedly was charged with possibly killing her boyfriend, the Boston police officer. But as of right now in Denham, Massachusetts, it looks like the breaking news, the verdict is out, not guilty on second-degree murder. So they remember there was a hung jury or something with the first trial, and then they had the trial again, and it appears that it is not guilty now. Karen Reed, that's her name. Karen Reed, not guilty in Massachusetts. It looks like there's a big crowd out there cheering. I guess she's got a lot of supporters. This was just a wacky trial. I really didn't get into it or talk to it much. But it was just a wacky trial from the start. Sue Henry and I were just discussing a little bit of it during the change of shifts here. And then my computer attempted to give me the middle finger, so kind of deterred that. But there is a not guilty on second-degree murder for Karen Reed up in Massachusetts. So I'm sure she'll be coming out and giving a statement. She has been not shy to deal with the media up until this point, even though her lawyers have kind of kept her under a little control. But again, just an odd case from the start. The evidence, the accusations both ways were kind of crazy. So, you know, the justice system spoke, and there'll be some that don't like it. There'll be some that do. And someone like me who's kind of in the middle and really don't care, to be honest with you. So, guilty on OUI. Awaiting Karen Reed's courtroom exit after not guilty verdict on second-degree murder. That's all I'm getting on the screen now. Let me see if I can get further here. Like I said, everything here is working in slow motion as far as our computers go. But they are starting to come online, so as they do, we'll get to you. See how dependent we are on these little machines here? And the only headline I'm getting is not guilty on the second-degree murder charge for second-degree murder manslaughter. So, and they're waiting for her to exit the court and speak, so I guess, you know, whatever the result is, if there's any charges that were found, it's not enough to take her directly to jail. Do not pass go. So we'll see. We'll see where it stands here, but it appears for the most serious, egregious charges here that she is not guilty. She is acquitted on those charges. I believe I'm getting reports of there's some minor charges on some peripheral charges that may have been found guilty on, but it doesn't appear to be anything, you know, overly pending that they would keep her and take her to serve a sentence immediately. So the big charge, a second-degree murder, manslaughter, not guilty. So that's the breaking news that came out just as I was about to walk in the studio. I saw the verdict was pending, and by the time my computer gave me the finger, it's not guilty. So we have that operating under the influence. So that's what the charge was. So I guess it's similar to DUI. I don't know if Massachusetts has a different levels of charge for operating under the influence or driving under the influence. Maybe she wasn't actually driving the vehicle, but in the vehicle and control of the vehicle. That could be the differential there. So if you're in a vehicle and it's not moving, say you're at the wheel, the car's running, the keys are in the ignition, but it's in park and the car's driving, you are still held accountable in certain states for because you have the capability, you are operating a vehicle. So that could be the difference here. I don't know the specifics. I'm just guessing, but that could be the differentiation here. Looks like she was given a year's probation plus a DUI program. Again, I don't have the luxury of listening to what's being said. And as I'm trying to get my stuff together, usually I have all my iPad, my phone, my two computers set up. But like I said, they decided to take today off early. And as you heard earlier, we will not be here tomorrow. It's Juneteenth. It's a holiday for Odyssey, and we have to take it off if we like it or not. So we will be on a holiday. Listen, you give me a holiday, I'm going to take it. I don't care what it's for. So there you go. And I will be off on Friday as well. Make a nice four-day weekend out of it. I got some things to do and hopefully catch up on some things. I do have some of my kids coming up next week, and there'll be a lot of things happening between now and 4th of July as far as, you know, family events and such like that. So I'm really looking forward to that. But let's get to the day's messages. Now, this started yesterday, where Keystone Mission is closing two homeless shelters, both in Wilkes-Barre and Scranton. And Sue Henry did a great interview with Mayor George Brown of Wilkes-Barre yesterday, to where he was kind of taken back because he was not in the loop originally. You know, he found out through the media that this was happening, and that's pretty messed up, meaning the fact that, you know, he and the city of Wilkes-Barre initiated over $200,000 of taxpayer dollars to the Keystone Mission and had another $100,000-plus matched from the state from one of the local state representatives. So over $300,000 in taxpayer dollars went to this entity over the last few years. And then you have the city of Scranton, which, you know, I did some research today, and they, I believe, somewhere just under $800,000. I can get you the precise amounts in just a minute, because there were a lot of stories today, so you know, we'll see. Here we go. I have it up now, and this is on my Facebook page, so you could see it there, because I bring the receipts, and the proof is there. The city of Scranton has awarded Keystone Mission a total of $768,500 from all funds based on available records. This includes a $43,500 in American Rescue Plan ARPA funds, nonprofit grant, a $25,000 in December of 2022, $18,500 in June of 2022. So those were the two grants, June and December, both totaling $43,500 from the American Rescue Plan Act. And they also gave $725,000 in community development block grants, funds in 2023 for the rehabilitation of the former Samter's building at 600-602 Lackawanna Avenue to establish the Keystone Mission's Innovation Center for Homeless and Poverty, which is part of Keystone Mission. So between the almost $669,000 that the city of Scranton gave and over $300,000 that the city of Wilkes-Barre gave, that's over $1 million. And if you recall, the former CEO of the Keystone Mission resigned or left earlier in the year or late last year, and the former CEO came back to kind of hold the place together and kind of reestablish its direction. And he's the one currently holding the that position today. So there's a lot of questions that needs to go on with Keystone Mission, as far as some places have contingency plans for others. If you remember during a code blue, which is when it gets below a certain temperature and they open up some emergency shelters, Keystone Mission did not have enough staff to keep it open. Then they came up with a plan that there was a couple hours where they transferred over from their day operations to their night shelter operations. But what's not being said a lot, and you would mind you, if the board is deciding to close up shop on a lot of places and reduce staff by a tremendous amount, I think they're reducing 80% of their staff, if not more, 75% of their staff will be laid off. Now, they are attempting, their human resources and everything are trying to place these employees in other positions in other areas. But Barron's and Keystone Mission will reduce staff from 21 employees to 6 employees. So Justin Behrens, former CEO and executive director of the nonprofit, said on a phone interview that increasing costs, decreasing in donations and volunteers led to the board of directors to make the difficult decision. And again, if you recall, and you could do some searches in the media because there was stories about it, the former CEO left abruptly. And the former CEO, this Justin Behrens, came in to kind of rebuild the organization and get a grasp of it. But there was not much said about the former CEO abruptly leaving. Well, now that we have this, now that we have a matter of almost $1 million, or if not, yes, $1 million in aid from 2022 to today given to this organization, and they're talking about being insolvent and have to close down because of funding and donations and such like that. I think both the city of Scranton, I think both the city of Wilkes-Barre, and I think maybe some state entities need to look into exactly what went on here. This is a lot of taxpayer dollars to our area for a very specific, a very needed cause. But this has happened time and time again where we've seen ARPA funds, we've seen these type of funds go to entities, and all of a sudden the entities no longer exist. They're out of business. It was like a last-minute payment drop before they closed doors. And there seems to be no accountability for that. And if anything's learned from it, hopefully in the future, there's some sort of written in to recoup the U.S. taxpayer, because you or I, the U.S. taxpayer, are the ones holding the bag for this. Again, it could be American Rescue Plan Act money, ARPA funds. It could be community development block grant funds. It could be local city or state funds or federal funds. It's our tax dollars. It's all our tax money. And for $1 million to be poured into this organization and to, at this point, really not have much in return for it, questions need to be asked and answered. So hopefully there's a lot going on here. There needs to be audits on what exactly took place. There needs to be questions on why did the former CEO abruptly leave and what were the problems. The board needs to answer questions. Their current CEO, he needs to answer questions. And if not, you know, hopefully our elected officials answer questions. And again, I applaud Mayor George Brown from Wilkes-Barre coming on Sue Henry's in very short notice, because he said he just found out about it by the media, you know, called and left a message for the CEO, who did get back to him, and I guess did give him a breakdown of what the situation was. And he was kind enough to come on this station with Sue yesterday. You can go back on the Odyssey app and listen to that. And it was a good interview. Jake, is that interview up on our Facebook page too with Sue and Mayor George Brown? It's also up on our Facebook page. You can go to WILK Facebook page and check it out there.
It's up on the Facebook page. And a matter of fact, Sue's best of for the weekend, I think it's sometime Sunday morning, it'll be re-aired.
All right, great. Thank you. And it's a really good interview. You know, I appreciate the mayor of Wilkes-Barre being forthcoming with the information he knows, because it's obvious that he was not shooken up, but you could tell he was not pleased with the way it was handled. I think he even said that. It's interesting that the Times Tribune did reach out to Mayor Scranton Paige Gebhardt Cognetti of Scranton, who was unavailable for comment. Well, if I gave $725,000 to an organization over 2 years that is now closing its doors to the residents in need in your city, I maybe wouldn't be available for comment too. But that's par for the course. You would think maybe there would be some answers. There's enough pictures, right? That being said, we're going to follow this. Hopefully more people start asking questions, and there needs to be some kind of in-depth look at the financials by an entity that has the ability and the skill set to do so, not just taking words for it. It's 3:22 here at WILK. We'll be back. Welcome back to the Rob O'Donnell Show on WILK News Radio, 103.1 FM, 910, 980 AM, or anywhere on that Odyssey app. 80 degrees on 3:25 on this Wednesday, June 18th, 2025. So, watching some of the Karen Reed supporters talking about her not guilty verdict. She does have quite the following there. There's like a fan club, shirts, T-shirts, signs. They're all ready for this. They're all for it. It's going to be interesting to see what said when she comes out. We'll see what's happening there. This story is weird. And there is not often that a story in Northeast Pennsylvania, you know, I read it or I look into it and it goes, this is just weird, and this one is. A lawsuit alleges Luzerne County duped into diverting $581,000 in opioid funds. A group of conspirators schemed to deceive Luzerne County officials into redirecting $581,037 in opioid settlement funds, according to a lawsuit filed in county court. Now, the thing is, the county isn't part of this lawsuit. Now, county council allocated the funds to Always Believe Recovery in December. The company wanted to open up a drug and alcohol detoxification and recovery center with 100 beds in a former assisted living facility in Wilkes-Barre, the former Riverview Ridge at 300 Cartwright Street. Well, now, last month, the council redirected the funds to True North Recovery of NEPA because Always Believe Recovery changed its legal operating name. The council resolution said, the lawsuit alleges Always Believe Recovery changed its name in February to True North Recovery LLC. The claims True North Recovery of NEPA LLC is a fraudulent entity created in April, just adding the two words of NEPA. First of all, if Luzerne County Council meets and gives over $500,000 to an entity called Always Believe Recovery in December, and that company officially changes its name, I would hope that Luzerne County Council does a little due diligence and maybe meets again to say, well, this isn't the company that we've given up this grant to. We need to know a little more, and we're going to that grant that was given to the former name, and it could be everything the same, but you just don't get to change. You're a different company officially, so you just don't get the transfer. But I guess the Luzerne County did redirect the funds to True North because of this, instead of saying, well, the other one is null and void, let's look into this again. Now, the issue here is some of the parties that were involved with the Always Believe Recovery were excluded from the new entity for whatever reason, doesn't really get into it. And then it goes into a whole cast of individuals who were involved with this whole thing. But the part of this that got me, let me see if I can find it in the story here, because it was it basically said that let me find it so I can give you the exact. It basically said that there was only a minor change in hopes that busy city workers would not notice the difference. It's pretty astounding, because you would think that when you have $500,000 in money being given to an entity, you wouldn't be rushing into things. But again, the county is not part of this litigation. It's just the two entities, the former entity and their new named entity, that omitted some of the original players that got this deal done. That's where the argument was, but Luzerne County is the one that would have been giving the money to who knows what entity at this time. Luzerne County is not named as a defendant in this, as per the county manager. She had not seen or read the lawsuit. County manager noted that the county has not transferred any funds to any entities involved in the planned recovery center. Well, that's a good thing, but I think they should put everything on hold till something's worked out here, because this is over $500,000. It seems to be a civil matter between the two groups that keep changing names. But again, when you look at all the players who are involved, it's just an odd entity. It's an odd group of everyone here. The defendants listed in the lawsuit are Moran, the Joyce Carmody Moran Law Firm in Pittston, Nicholas Colangelo of Shavertown, Christopher Gilchrist of Jenkin Township, Matthew Haley of Greenfield Township, True North Recovery of NEPA LLC in Moosic, Ashburn Advisors LLC in Moosic, and the company principals Christopher Crawley and Paul Colarossi, and David Enslin of Clark Summit. So, again, seemed to be a wide array of people involved here. But they say that the reason for the slight name change, adding two words, created a nearly identical entity name designed to confuse third parties. Here's the piece I wanted you to read out. Particularly government agencies dispersing funds, the suit said. Well, again, the county is not a part and parcel to this lawsuit, but I would hope when after over $500,000 or a couple of $100,000 or tens of thousands of dollars, our government entities do their due diligence of who they're writing the checks to. We did see the incident in Lackawanna County with those rentals where they were duped into dispersing, what is it, $40,000, $50,000 to a fraudulent company for the tent rentals. So it's not unheard of, but that's the part that grabbed me of this, that they were hoping on particularly government entities dispersing funds to confuse them by just adjusting two words. Crazy stuff again, but Northeast Pennsylvania never disappoints. It's 3:33 here at WILK. We'll be back. Welcome back to the Rob O'Donnell Show on WILK News Radio, 3:38. Got some text messages coming in. You can call or text at 570-883-0098. People said that they, what about personal donations to the mission, Keystone Mission? This person was giving $20 a month. How many people did that? Sad. I agree. Somebody said, you won't hear from the mayor of Scranton until she checks with her consultants first. And another person texted in that it sounds like a scam, that whole lawsuit. Listen, the whole thing raises a lot of questions, and if I was Luzerne County, I would back out of the entire thing and start from scratch and find out where to appropriately apply those funds, not just somebody's looking who's looking to create something to get funds. So we'll see where that goes. Well, here we go. See, I don't have access to my – this computer's messed up today, but we have it now. So Pennsylvania's new Let Freedom Ring license plates are available, and there's a way to get them. I like them. It has Pennsylvania on top in red, the blue numbers, has the Liberty Bell in the background, and says Let Freedom Ring on the bottom. White background for the whole thing, white plate. If you haven't seen them, check them out. I like it. The Let Freedom Ring license plates are available to order. It's celebrating across the state in 2026, but it says they sold 40,000 some odd of them. The new license plate celebrates Pennsylvania as the birthplace of American democracy. Nearly 11,700 new plate orders have already been filled for people who signed up for the updates last year, officials said to the release. Somewhere in there it said there was maybe that's the number. Vehicle owners can find instructions to request a standard issue license plate from PennDOT. Personalized plates can be requested. Or the new plate. You could still get the military special organization, special fund, and specialty plates without legislative mandated designs. And they'll be updated to the new design and be available in the coming months. So if you have a military or special organization plate, you can also get that with the Let Freedom Ring new format. It's a nice one. I like it. You know, we're in the process of maybe getting something now. Maybe I'll upgrade to the new Pennsylvania Let Freedom Ring license plates. I'm digging it. The Liberty Bell in the background. Simple blue lettering and numbers. Pennsylvania on top in red and Let Freedom Ring on the bottom in red. I'll get a picture of this up so you can check it out. But I like it. You know, I didn't like when like New York went back to that orangey yellow plate and some other states. But I'm digging this Pennsylvania plate, so maybe I'll get it for the next car. It's 3:40, coming up on 3:42 here at WILK. We'll be back. Welcome back to the Rob O'Donnell Show. Well, my good friend Brianna Morello, who's an independent journalist, reported that a DHS is issuing a warning about the rise in Chinese-manufactured signal jammers to the United States. Since 2021, Customs and Border Protection has reported an approximately 830% surge in seizures, even as Chinese companies try to evade inspections. Signal jammers can interfere with the various radio frequency channels, endangering emergency response, law enforcement, and critical infrastructure. It's important to add that illegal aliens from South America disrupt local police communications during invasions or bank robberies in Florida, Illinois, Ohio, Pennsylvania, Texas, Vermont, and Virginia. So DHS is putting out a warning that there's been an influx of these signal jammers coming in, and Chinese companies trying to evade customs when they ship them in. So something to be aware of. Now, we've been talking about this for a while where I think it's common knowledge now that the Rite Aid drugstores will be closing. A bunch of locations in Northeast Pennsylvania will close as the pharmacy giant undergoes a second bankruptcy. And that's not all of them yet. We've been slowly moving our prescriptions from our local Rite Aid that we use to other entities. I think at the time we still only have one or two that's left. But ours is not on this list, so hopefully it's remaining open for a couple more weeks. At which point we're going to need refills anyway, and we'll just have them sent to a new location. But if you have your prescriptions at a Rite Aid, you might want to start being proactive so you don't have to miss out on your medications, especially if you need it. Now, four stores in Lackawanna County and five in Luzerne County and one in Wayne County will close. The company disclosed the shutdown in separate court filings on June 6th and Friday. It did not give dates. Locations that will close, as listed in the Friday filing, are 20 South River Street in Plains Township, 1000 North Church Street in Hazleton, 1050 Northern Boulevard in South Abington Township, 1650 Main Street in Oliphant. Listed for closure in the June 6th filing are 155th East Northampton Street in Wilkes-Barre, 102 North Main Street in Pittston, 556 Union Street in Luzerne, 639 Hamlin Highway in Lake Ariel, 1080 South Washington Avenue in Scranton, 500 North Main Avenue in Scranton. The company announced last month that stores in Scranton, South Abington, and Oliphant as being up for lease. Rite Aid Chapter File 11 bankruptcy last month, which will sell their assets. Now, I remember initially Rite Aid's report said that they were trying to sell their prescriptions to local neighboring pharmacies. I don't know if that's working that way now, because when we spoke to our pharmacist at our Rite Aid, they said you'd have to call your doctor and have them call in a new prescription to wherever you want to have it sent. So it doesn't look like that Rite Aid is participating in transferring any prescriptions anywhere else. You'd have to go through your doctors. A lot of times that entails a doctor visit. Hopefully they could just do it over the phone saying, hey, can you change my pharmacy for my refills or my prescriptions to this pharmacy now? And hopefully it's that easy. But if not, you may have to spend $15, $20, $25, $30, $35 for a copayment to visit your doctor to get new prescriptions for your new pharmacies. But again, it appears sooner or later the Rite Aids will be closed. They will all be closed. So we'll see. We'll see what happens there. But I've told you from the start, especially our older listeners out there, if you have your prescriptions from Rite Aid, do not wait to the last minute, because it appears some of these places are going to close. You know, open 1 minute, close the next. So don't be caught where you don't have your availability to your medicine. Don't think, oh, I have plenty of my medicine, because you're going to wait a week or two, a month or whatever, and you're going to be out. And now you're scrambling to get in touch with your doctor to get into your medicine. It's 3:50 here at WILK. Time for Bloomberg. Welcome back to the Rob O'Donnell Show here on WILK News Radio. Just have an announcement from the Pentagon. Has announced the deaths of two soldiers supporting Iraq Operation Inherent Resolve. Now, that's in CENTCOM's area of operation. Staff Sergeant Saul Fabian Gonzalez, 26, of Pullman, Michigan, died June 17th, 2025, in Erbil, Iraq, as a result of non-combat-related incident. Sergeant First Class Emmett Wilfred Goodfridge, Jr., 40, of Roseville, Minnesota, died June 15th, 2025, in Camp Bahrain, Kuwait, as a result of non-combat-related incident. Both incidents are under investigation. So our condolences to those two soldiers and their families. And it just goes to show, even if they're not in direct combat, they're still in harm's way. So two soldiers, one in Iraq, one in Kuwait, killed in non-combat related incidents, which could be training, it could be movements, it could be a lot of anything. So again, our thoughts to their families. I did just share a post on my Facebook page. Blakely Police Department just found a little guy. A little, looks like some kind of poodle. It's black and white, mostly white with, looks like a black mask and black ears. Little guy was found on Pleasant Avenue. He's going to be going to the Griffin Pond shortly, but police helped find the owner before then. So the Blakely Police Department just put out a picture of the little puppy. The little guy panting away with his tongue out. Again, mostly white from what I see. You know, white around the nose, and it looks like he's got a black mask and black ears. Probably, you know, somewhere around the 8-pound range, 10-pound range. So if you know anyone who has a dog similar to that, you could see the picture on my Facebook page or go directly to the Blakely Police Department Facebook page. And hopefully we can get this little guy back to his owners. And I'm sure the owners are crazy if they know he's missing, because most people do when they're missing part of their family. So somebody said, hey, Rob, I just switched my prescription location at the new place. Rite Aid had set up. Easy phone call. Somebody said, Clark Summit Rite Aid has a sign that says permanently closed on 7/13/2025. Yep, some updates there. It's happening, so realize that that's going to be the case if you have any prescriptions at Rite Aid. So there was a small group, and by small group, I mean 11, and thankfully that, who's against ICE leasing part of the Luzerne County Flood Protection Authority building. So they mobilized outside the building because since it wasn't on the agenda, they couldn't talk at the meeting. But all 11 of them, and again, these are members of the Democrat Socialist of America, go figure. One of them, thankfully, ran for Scranton City Council and didn't really get very far. So not much support, I guess. It's interesting because this lease was signed under the Biden administration, but now, of course, you know, all the hysteria around it. It's interesting because I was going through some of the numbers today, and we've played the audio of President Bill Clinton saying the same thing when it comes to removing illegal immigrants, especially ones with violent pasts. We've talked from Barack Obama saying the same thing, Hillary Clinton saying the same thing. Barack Obama actually removed about 3 million. Now, what are we at with Donald Trump? Like 170,000? And 75% of them are have other criminal charges against them. Some of them extremely violent. So it was okay when the former president, Barack Obama, removed over 3 million illegal immigrants. A lot of them just simply here illegally, you know, an administrative offense, some like to say, which is not true. But Donald Trump and ICE goes out and removes 170,000, and it's utter mayhem. Our democracy is at risk. You have politicians who no one would know them for any other reason, you know, getting themselves arrested, and then thankfully the governor swoops in New York anyway and has the charges dropped. That's not specialized treatment, though. It's interesting that it was 100% performative in New York. This comptroller, who actually we're looking into litigation now as New York City retirees because he handles our pension fund. And if he's going to act like a criminal, we should treat him like a criminal. But he's running for mayor, and he's not doing very good at either. So, of course, this was a last-minute attention grab. Now everybody knows who he is. Maybe he'll gain some support. Maybe he won't. But, you know, he's even behind the socialist running for mayor. And then you got Andrew Cuomo in front of it. Could you imagine where Andrew Cuomo, the former governor of New York, disgraced governor, sexual harassment and the COVID debacle, is the best choice because it's the worst of the evils? It's incredible. But that's where you're at, New York. And listen, I'll say it time and time again. They get what they vote for, and good for them. Vote for whoever you want, New York. It's 4 o'clock here at WILK.